Welcome back to another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, joined as always by the good doctor. Eric, how's it going, my man?
I'm going well, man. Nice weekend, you know, other than the Vikings not playing and Kansas City losing. It was a, you know, interesting weekend of football.
Oh man, that's very sad for you. You know, no Vikings and your other team. They let you down and they lost to the Cowboys of all teams, which has got to make it hurt just even more. Yeah.
Don't
everyone
like
should hate the Cowboys. Luke, man, what's going on, dog?
Hey there. I got to watch if I had to pick a second team, I guess it would be the Raiders, but I'm not like that passionate about it. But I did get to watch Marshall Newhouse go airborne and fumble, so that was fun.
His tweet about that was hilarious.
Oh my god, his whole Twitter feed was so funny after that.
It was so good. So good. What's the mood like out in California around, like, you know, the Raiders and all of that with the move and everything else?
It's pretty Dodgers hungover here right now.
Okay.
There's kind of a baseball mood going on. The Rams have taken, Chargers haven't yet. I saw my first Chargers hat. The first just in the wild Chargers hat that since they moved, I think, yesterday.
That's progress.
Yeah.
It's progress. Next, maybe they'll get some people to fill up their soccer stadium. But, you know, it's progress. It's progress. Well, you know, as Eric said, we had no Vikings game, but it's the midpoint of the season. And, you know, many pods, articles, et cetera, have been written, you know, midseason grades, midseason awards, things like that. And what I wanted to ask you guys, really, as we get to this point in the season is, you know, how good are the Vikings? Because when you go through some different, you know, evaluation methods, you have, you know, 538 that has the Vikings ranked ninth overall. The, you know, simple rating system from Pro Football Reference has them fourth in the NFC, eighth in the NFL. Brian Fry, however, has them at 14th. Eric and his ELO from Pro Football Focus has them a little bit lower as well. The DVOA has us at sixth. And so that really got me thinking a little bit and, you know, asked a question on Twitter and a thread that's still kind of ongoing right now is, you know, A, I guess we can start on this topic is, you know, how good are the Vikings? And then after that, I guess we can talk about, you know, the thing that seems to have a lot of different points of view on it, which is how tough is the schedule the Vikings played season to date? And then how tough is the schedule that the Vikings will be facing as they move forward? And then really, is strength of schedule even a good tool to look at in analysis for football? Does it mean anything? Is it useful? Does it do anything for you at all? So I guess with the first question, and I'll kick it to you first, Eric, is how good are the Vikings?
Yeah, I mean, so we have them at 12. They were as high as 10, and then even though they beat – Cleveland, they didn't grade as well, and Cleveland, you know, is a poor team. So, but aside from that, I mean, I think that the Vikings are, you know, we had them somewhere around 20 to start the season, and now they're at about 12. And so, you know, they've certainly moved up. And in terms of like one of our rating systems, they have faced a really like, you know, they faced like the fourth toughest schedule so far. You know, kind of balanced really well between offenses and defenses. So you've seen them play, you know, in hindsight, New Orleans has, you know, both offensively and defensively look like a good win for Minnesota. Pittsburgh has, you know, ascended to, you know, either the class or, you know, sort of second best team in the AFC. You know, Tampa Bay has some good offensive metrics. They're awful defensively. And then Green Bay, you know, sort of that's going to be the weird thing. And that was sort of on the Twitter thread too, is, you know, Green Bay, the Vikings certainly didn't face the full Green Bay, but they certainly, you know, they beat up on them. So, you know, I think that the Vikings are looking good. Weirdly, though, you know, moving forward, if you look at kind of where the Vikings are in terms of strength of schedule, you know, looking forward, a couple of things that they have that are like a little tough for them is the fact that, you know, they still face a difficult schedule, 11th most difficult moving forward by our metrics, but also they're in an NFC, which if you look at, let's say, the top 12 teams in the league by our rankings, only the Steelers, New England Patriots, Kansas City Chiefs, and Buffalo Bills we put ahead of Minnesota. So that leaves, you know, that's four teams. So then the other eight have to be NFC. And, of course, only 16 teams out of the NFC make the playoffs. So, you know, and the Vikings are in a division, so that helps them. But they're in a conference, which is going to be very difficult to sort of move through, kind of no matter how good they are.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough road because a lot of the games that they need, like a lot of the teams that they're going to be competing with for playoff spots, they play directly. So if, you know, even if they are ranked ahead of like the Panthers or Falcons or whatever, if they lose that game, if they blow that game, you know, that's going to count really hard against them in terms of like Vegas odds and in terms of like actual seeding when it comes time. But, you know, if you're going to say somewhere between, you know, 14th and 8th or 9th, which isn't a huge range, you know, you're probably somewhere in the middle of that and like, a, you know, 11th or something like that. And sitting at 6-2 is really, really nice because it lowers the amount that you have to accomplish. So you can afford to, and you can afford to maybe blow the Lions game because you already have two games on them, provided that you take care of business against some of the other teams that you really, really should be able to beat easily, like Cincinnati and Chicago at home shouldn't be that tough, especially in a week 17 game when they'll be out of contention and they kind of have a history of coasting. And maybe we can get lucky and avoid Aaron Rodgers in the Christmas Eve game. You know, I'm not sure if he's going to be there or not, and that's going to matter a lot and totally mess up all of the aggregate like power ranking models, because if they're losing games with Brett Hundley and then Aaron Rodgers comes back, it's that would be a tough game. But just looking at what they have to accomplish, it's really, really nice to be 6-2 right now because it means some of these tougher games you can actually afford to give a few.
So right. So Luke, you typically come with very measured takes, and once again there, you said a lot of things that were very good, a lot of good content there, but I still couldn't get you pinned down on how good you actually think the team is.
I think they're somewhere in the middle of the range of all of the rankings that you listed off with like ELO, probably closest to honestly PFF ELO. I think they're about a playoff bubble team, put them at, you know, 11th, 12th. They're one of the team, you know, they're a team that can maybe get hot and get in the playoffs and maybe do a little damage, but I don't think they're like Super Bowl contenders. That said, I am evaluating them essentially off of what they've done so far, which has been the Case Keenum Vikings. Teddy Bridgewater comes back and we have an upgrade at the quarterback position. I actually think this team has a potential to be special, but what they've produced so far is that of about an 11th-ish, 12th-ish best team in the league.
That's fair. And I guess, Eric, did you have a point you wanted to jump in with there?
Yeah, and I think that that's important in that, you know, I think a lot of fans are, you know, they get upset, right, when we're not respecting their team the best. But if you look at, and these are coming out tomorrow on ProFootballFocus.com, but if you look at the Vikings' next few opponents, so Washington, we actually have them as 13th. You know, they've played a tough schedule. They've hung tough. Vikings have them next, right? So they're playing a team kind of in their realm. The next week, the Rams. The Rams, we have the Rams as 6th, right? So that's an important game. The Lions, we have the Lions at 16th. And so the Vikings have them next. Following that, we have the Falcons. We have the Falcons at 9th. And then following that, it's the Panthers. We have the Panthers at 7, right? So I think that the key to that is, okay, if the Vikings are a top 10 team, and they truly are, they will be so once they go through that 5-game stretch. Let's say they go through that 5-game stretch at 4-1. They're going to be one of the best teams in the league in any rating system. You know what I'm saying? Whereas if they go through those games at 1-4 or 2-3, they'll probably still be somewhere around 12, 13, and 14 because they're losing to quality teams. And so, you know, that's kind of where I stand. I think you know, these things tend to shake themselves out the way that they're supposed to.
And kind of to that end, because one of the things that I've seen quite a bit, you know, today especially, because, you know, as Vikings fans, we always have to find the, you know, the most negative extreme we can go to. And so the thing that keeps popping up today is that because the Lions' schedule is so, you know, quote, easy, that they are going to win out or almost win out and leapfrog the Vikings, I guess, based on what you're seeing and kind of where you guys have the Lions ranked. I guess, what are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Yeah, we've, you know, we started the year a little bit bearish on the Lions just because last season we thought that they were fool's gold. And then, of course, they didn't finish well. And, you know, Detroit's played some decent games against teams like Atlanta, against teams like Minnesota, even though, again, Minnesota was shorthanded. And then Green Bay, I would say that last night's game win was impressive. You know, much in the same way I would say the Vikings win over the Ravens was impressive. Or their win, you know, over Tampa Bay was impressive. So I'm not going to crown them anything yet, but they took care of business, right? So I would say Detroit's probably right around the middle of the pack team, kind of like the Dolphins a season ago or something like that, where if the bounces bounce in the right direction, they could challenge Minnesota for the division. But I'm not in a position to say the Lions are going to run off any string of games because we don't have that type of history for them.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced that the Lions are good, but I am becoming convinced that they will be able to make the playoffs in spite of that. And that's just part of having a playoffs, you know, built off of a win-loss record in a 16-game season, is there can be a team that isn't that good, but, you know, gets to beat up on a bunch of bad teams, which is looking like what's going to happen here down the stretch. And they could put together, you know, a 10-6 season and sneak in and then be like an easy ticket to someone else to make the divisional round, which is exactly what happened last year. They weren't that good of a team. I think the Lions and the Texans were both in the playoffs and they were like 25th in DVOA or something like that. And I don't think many metrics really disagreed with that. And then they were both, you know, the Lions were just like this easy steamrollable team for the Seahawks to get into, like, okay, now the real playoffs start. And I think the Lions are careening toward a similar fate this year.
But do you see though that, so my thought is I don't think the Lions make the playoffs unless they win the NFC North. Because if you look at,
oh, I feel you. Yeah. 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 Cause the Cowboys and the Seahawks and the Rams and the Eagles are
right. So there's going to be between the Cowboys, the Rams, the Seahawks, the Panthers and the Saints, right? Among those teams, right, there's going to be two that don't make the playoffs, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of preposterous to think of right now because, right, Dallas is 5-3, New Orleans is 6-2, Carolina is 6-3, I'm forgetting, the Rams are 6-2, right? So Detroit's at 4-4, and even if they, you know, like, so they basically have to finish – you know, 6-2 down the stretch just to go 10-6. So I don't know. I do know that they have a weak schedule, but to bank on Detroit going 6 out of 8 games and leapfrogging, right? They have to leapfrog at least 2 of those teams, if not 3, to make that
second. And one of those probably has to be the Vikings then.
I would agree that I don't see the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings are already 6-2, so they're kind of in that mix too, but I don't see – you know, I don't see Detroit being able to leapfrog all those teams. I think their path to the playoffs is sweeping the Vikings and finishing 9-7 and the Vikings finishing 9-7 or both teams finishing 10-6. I know the teams from the South have to beat up on each other. Atlanta's 4-4 as well. And I think that they're, you know, they're every bit the contender that Detroit is. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's just, I mean, the NFC is stacked. I mean, you're far better off. I mean, I think the Buffalo Bills at 5-3 have a playoff probability that's way higher than any one of those particular teams, just because the path in the AFC is far weaker.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see a scenario where the Lions lose on Thanksgiving to the Vikings and still make the playoffs, because I think they would have to win every other game on their schedule. And even if the teams are easy, that's just too hard to pull off with the amount of variance in a typical football game.
Yep. They're just not a good enough. I don't think they're a good enough football team to make any. And I frankly think the same thing about the Vikings currently is I don't think they're a good enough football team to say that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. Mm-hmm. Like I think Detroit, I mean, last night's game, you know, if Green Bay punches in on the first drive, right, it's a totally different ball game. You know, and I think every game's like that for Detroit.
So in terms of kind of what's happened season to date, one of the things, I guess really not one of, but really the thing that gets thrown out most often when people are talking about kind of how tough the road has been, it's strength of schedule where you kind of add up the wins and losses of the teams that you faced. And, okay, so the combined record of the teams the Vikings have faced to date is X, and the combined record of the teams the Vikings are going to face in the future is Y, so they have a tougher road ahead than the road that they had that they just passed. That's the most prevalent way of talking about strength of schedule. I guess I'm going to start with Luke on this one. I guess, is that even a good way to look at it, just with all the randomness that we know that can happen in wins and losses, where you have, you know, a team like, we'll say, the Miami Dolphins that are at 4-4 but have a negative, 63-point differential right now at this point in the season?
Yeah, there's a bunch of issues that I have with strength of schedule in that light. I think the concept of strength of schedule is really strong, and I think that's why it's popular, because it's really easy to understand, right? If you won a bunch of games and you beat a bunch of bad teams, you maybe aren't that good. And I think people can grasp that concept, but the fact that they measure how good your opponents were by win-loss introduces so many problems. For one, wins and losses are a binary result, right? You win or you lose. So you can have two teams that play very, very well, but one of them still comes out with a loss, and now suddenly, you know, it looks like you played an easier team when in reality they might have played very well for a bunch of games but lost them anyways. You have a lot of variance in a game just on the whole. You know, there are all kind. Any game that is within one score is basically a coin flip. If you follow Justice Mosqueda Jumosk on Twitter, he has been parroting this a lot, and he's done a lot of interesting work at Setting Edge on, like, the randomness of close games and how if you win a lot of close games, you're likely to kind of regress back to the mean. And a lot of interesting stuff over there, and you should check it out. But, you know, if a team won five of their games within one score, that has really no indication on if they're actually difficult to beat or not. And I think measuring strength of schedule by win-loss or even point differential can be a little misleading, right? Because there's like punt return touchdowns and that crap's not sustainable.
Don't we know that one?
Yeah, we know that one. So if you're going to measure how difficult someone's opponents are, you have to use something a little bit sounder, something like ELO or something like DVOA, or something that has a proven track record of actually being predictive, because when you're looking at strength of schedule, you are being predictive. You're trying to use something that predicts, okay, we play the Lions, that is going to be exactly this hard or this easy. And if you're looking at win-loss, like wins don't predict more wins, and that has been proven time and time and time again. There's really no way to use a win-loss record to predict the result of any game at all outside of, oh yeah, the Patriots are probably going to beat the Browns. It's just a really bad way to go about it. And if you're going to use a generally good concept, which is how hard were the teams you played and how hard are the teams you're going to play, you got to use a measuring stick that actually works.
That's fair. So in terms of like a measuring stick that actually works, I guess, Eric, when you look ahead and you've talked to it a little bit, but I guess what are the measuring sticks that are valid or strong? I know obviously you have the PFF ELO that you put a lot of time into, but are there any other kind of methodologies that you would look to if you were looking ahead to try to understand, you know, what the road really might look like for the Vikings beyond just the wins and losses of the teams that we're about to face?
Yeah. So one thing that I've used is Massey. So Cade Massey is a guy who developed a rating system based upon basically point spread and using that. And I've sort of developed a version of it using our grades. And the nice thing about Massey is it allows you to sort of look at offensive and defensive ratings separately. so that you can kind of look back and say, okay, you know, the Vikings face a decent amount of decent defenses moving forward. You know, so ELO is kind of a more of a team-centric thing. Wins and losses, more of a team-centric thing. And so, so that's something like we found that to be pretty predictive in terms of like using that in an algorithm to sort of try to pick games. You know, I think what Warren Sharp does is pretty valuable in terms of looking at success rate, both in, versus the run and versus the pass. I think he gets a little weird when he starts looking at, you know, success rates on downs and distances because the sample sizes start to shrink. But, you know, I think what he does is pretty valuable. I agree with Luke that sort of wins and losses, you know, it's really hard because, you know, like, for example, Atlanta just played their first division game this past weekend, right? And so we're basing everything we think we know on Atlanta, where, you know, four of their first seven games are versus AFC East opponents that they play once every 4 years. And, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just weird to sort of project from that, even, you know, just kind of shrinking to the extreme. You know, the Vikings just played the Browns. Like, how much does that really tell us about anything? You know, and so I think it is important to sort of try to develop metrics. So what I try to do is I use this Massey thing, and I look year to date, and I look rest of the season, and that's what I use to try to get a gauge, like, you know, when I write these little narratives about the ELO, the top 10 ELO teams in a week, I look, okay, they've had the toughest schedule to date. They have the easiest schedule moving forward. So, you know, have a look at this team. Or, you know, a team like the Rams, for example, you know, they have, you know, they had a relatively simple schedule up until this point, but they actually have a relatively easy schedule moving forward too. So we shouldn't necessarily fade them based upon their easy schedule. A priori. So, you know, all of those things are important parts of the equation.
Okay. So with all that said, what are your thoughts on the road ahead for the Minnesota Vikings? I guess we can start with Washington. I guess, you know, starting out, like you said, those teams are very, very closely matched up, really across many different rating systems. I guess, what should we expect with that game and really kind of going forward in terms of how things shake out for the team based on what the schedule is looking like for us?
This is going to be a tough one to win on the road. I really wish this game were at home because it is very toss-up-y. I like the way that our defense matches up with their banged-up offensive line in terms of run game. You know, they've gotten a lot of production out of their trio of running backs, but the Vikings' run defense has been so good, and we can probably anticipate a pretty low success rate and hopefully some advantageous down and distance situations on defense. I'm pretty worried about moving the ball though, because the Redskins have a pretty good secondary. It sounds like Case Keenum is going to be the quarterback, which I think this is a defense that can probably take advantage of him and create some turnovers. And that's going to create a situation where the Vikings have to outplay the Skins by a lot to turn it into a win rather than, you know, play them toe-to-toe and win the turnover battle. I don't think the Vikings are going to be able to win the turnover battle easily. Case Keenum's going to have to take care of the ball very well, and you know, the problems, the mechanical issues that he has might come to light, you know, against guys like Josh Norman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you guys have heard my take, maybe not on this podcast, but I think all of the things that we've said about the Vikings being in a good position, being 6-2, going up against difficult opponents, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the Vikings are in a position where losing a game is not catastrophic. And to me, that is the environment in which they should play Teddy Bridgewater, as opposed to the environment in which they should ride Keenum for another game, right? Because at some point in time, Bridgewater is going to need some rust knocked off. And I would rather him knock the rust off when you have a 2-game lead over Detroit than when you have a 1-game lead over Detroit. And so, you know, that's the difficulty. That's, you know, I'm going to be watching this game. And if Keenum starts, and frankly, I've said on this podcast too, I think the world of how Case Keenum has played. But if he's starting in this game, I'm always going to be a little irritated at the fact that they, you know, double down on a winning hand with low odds in Keenum as opposed to cashing their chips. Because I think Bridgewater represents a better hand moving forward. That said, I think, you know, if you're thinking about Washington, you really have to, you know, they were on the road a week ago. They gave a super effort, probably the best effort they're going to give, shorthanded against the Seahawks. They won a game they probably shouldn't have won. And you wonder if there's a letdown in this spot. I know the Vikings are 1.5 favorites on the road. That seems interesting, considering last season they were, I believe, underdogs on the road against Washington with Bradford at quarterback. So I don't know how much worse Washington has got, but, you know, the odds makers seem to favor the Vikings here. I would say that this is a spot where that's more favorable towards the Vikings than we think, but as Luke said, it's very coin tossy.
Yeah, last year, the Washington game, the Vikings had dropped 3 straight, 2 to the Bears and Lions back-to-back, so I think that's probably why the Vegas line was more unfavorable. I'm actually surprised that we're favored on the road against Washington. I didn't know that. That seems pretty generous in favor of the Vikings.
1.5. Yeah, so they're 1.5 favorites. Actually, this entire week, a lot of home underdogs: Arizona, Washington, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, and then the San Francisco 49ers, the Denver Broncos are all home dogs this week.
It seems like too many, Eric.
It seems like there's some opportunity there, Jason.
What were you going to say, Luke?
I do have one thought on starting Teddy. I think, in favor of just starting Teddy whenever he's healthy and not, you know, letting all this gamesmanship cause you to lose a game he might not have otherwise lost. But in the event that you're not sure about him currently and you want to give him another week, is there something to be said for starting him in what is perhaps the most difficult game left on the schedule, which is the Rams, or the most difficult opponent left on the schedule, which is the Rams? It's probably the one that you're going to be least likely to win. So in terms of like maximizing win probability, that's going to be like the one game where if it does tank and he does just need to get the rust off and have a bad day, maybe it's the one that you were least likely to win anyways. I think it's a much less strong point because I don't think any of the games on the schedule are like circled losses like maybe the Steelers game was, or what we thought the Packers game was going to be when we thought Aaron Rodgers would be there. But I guess just in a more like general philosophical sense, is there something to be said about making a change on a difficult week just because, hey, this one's going to be tough anyways. Let's just kind of gerrymander all of our problems into one thing and then win the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, if Bridgewater is healthy enough to be active for a game, he's healthy enough to start if he's the best quarterback, right? So, like, I don't like this idea of him of not knowing whether or not he can play and then having that be your backup. It strikes me very similarly as what they did in Chicago when they went into that game with one healthy quarterback and they started the other guy. And, you know, and then chaos ensued. I actually, you know, so if they think Teddy's healthy, I feel like they should play him. And then if he's not, then they should do what they did in Chicago and hook him and put Keenum in. And because Keenum's your best option then, and that's great, you know, and Keenum's not a bad backup option. He's never been. So, yeah, I can see the whole Rams thing. I actually push back a little bit on the idea that the Rams are the toughest on their schedule, only because whenever the Rams have played an actual defense this year, they have struggled. When they played Seattle and when they've played, I believe it was Washington, they struggled to move the ball a little bit. So I would push back just a little bit against that. I think it's, you know, what they're doing is fantastic. They have more points this season than they did all of last season in half as many games. So, I mean, there's not a ton you can say that's bad about the Rams, but the run defense is really bad. It's sort of like what you would expect when you put a safety at inside linebacker in a 3-4. And their defensive backs are not good. They have one guy, Aaron Donald, who I think will give them fits all day, but you know, it's not the really strong team that I think we're necessarily pegging them as, because I think the Giants team, there's a lot of quit there.
Yeah, and I think that Jared Goff, to a degree, is still living off Yeah, he played well against the Giants, but I think he's still living off a little bit of the beginning of the season, because it wasn't like he was really lighting the world on fire for those games right before he, you know, went wild on the Giants, who were missing a bunch of players. So I don't know. I feel like, even though on paper they're a really good team, I feel like Zimmer is going to do terrible things to Jared Goff, and that's going to be a game that you know, potentially could go for us in a big way just based on what the defense does. Like, I'm still not all the way there on Jared Goff, even though he's, you know, he started off very well and had some good games. I feel like Zimmer will be able to shut that offense down for some reason.
That makes sense. I think just his youth too, you know, he's playing well, but still those young quarterbacks that have, you know, like he's never played the Vikings. That's something that this is going to be his first time playing the Vikings, his first time playing a Zimmer defense.
Yeah. For the next 2 weeks in a row, I mean, we basically get to go against the offense that Zimmer coached against in practice, you know, every week for years in Cincinnati. I mean, you're going against Gruden's offense, and then an offense run by Gruden's, like a quote unquote disciple of Gruden in LA. So that'll be another, there's a familiarity. I think this should help us out as well in both the matchups, even though, you know, Vernon Davis and Jordan Reed terrify me for Washington. So
I will say, assuming Teddy Bridgewater is playing by the Rams game, it is kind of a bummer that we're being robbed of a Case Keenum revenge game.
Cause we need that. We definitely need that.
We need that storyline.
But you know what though? No. There's only so much room for revenge games. Tampa Bay, New York Jets is a Josh McCown and Ryan Fitzpatrick dual revenge game. So, I mean, God only gives us so much.
that is a fair point. I guess before we wrap up the strength of schedule discussion, I guess, were there any, you know, final points that either of you guys wanted to get in terms of whether we should be using it all, where people should go to get better strength of schedule analysis, and I guess any last words that you have on the topic of strength of schedule before we wrap this one on up?
One thing that I want to make sure that people are thinking about when they're thinking about strength of schedule is that we often kind of aggregate it all together into one nice number and then like rank the schedules. But wins are segmented and, you know, binary. So if you're playing seven really bad teams and one really good one, you know, that might drag your strength of schedule down, but then you could end up going 7-1 through that or whatever it may be. And while I think it does make sense still to like aggregate them all, because like, well, you know, your one hard game is a harder game, and so your win probabilities are going to be low, and that's going to be a better, more predictive way to do it. I think it's also important to just like approach strength of schedule with some level of thoughtfulness. You know, where if you have three tough games coming up and then three really bad games coming up, you know, you can just like just be thoughtful with strength of schedule, I guess, is the point.
Yep. I think all of these things, right, there's so much noise that, you know, just never latch on to one thing too tightly, right? I'm going to send out these special teams rankings for PFF with my algorithm tomorrow. And the Vikings are the best special teams in the league based on our numbers. And there's some things you can latch on to. Kai Forbath, extra points aside, has been a fantastic field goal kicker.
That's what I was going to say. Do your rankings include extra points?
Yeah. Well, they're only worth 1 point. So CJ Ham, you know, Marcus Sherrills, Kentrell Brought. The Vikings have one of the best collection of backup players who play on special teams in the entire league. Now, in 4 weeks, they could be 12th, you know, just because of noise. Aside from how good quarterbacks are, and even then, like we just talked about, you know, Jared Goff, I would fold Carson Wentz into the same discussion. You know, don't be so quick to latch on to a nugget and go with it, right? A lot of these things have nuance to them. A lot of these things have yeah buts to them. And a lot of these things change drastically, right? Like at this time last week, Deshaun Watson had a functional knee, right? And so like all these things change on a dime, and you just have to be ready to sort of adapt your thinking sort of on the fly.
Yeah, and that goes into like the Packers without Rodgers too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, the Houston Texans went from a team that was favored by 2 touchdowns to a team that was incapable of beating the Colts at home.
Thank you, T.Y. Hilton, for all of the fantasy football wins this week.
That's right. It made me so sad.
Oh, hey, man, I'll take them. But, gentlemen, thanks again for another wonderful episode. I guess before we get on out of here, Eric, what's upcoming for you? Where can the people find your work?
Yeah, so I'm Pro Football Focus. We're doing our like you said, the ELO ratings. I'm going to publish the quarterly special teams rankings, ratings. And then every week, Sam Monson sort of comes out with a little bit of nuggets from our analytics. I think he's doing another one on win projections this year based on our work. And then Friday, tune in for the spread picks. And if you're really if you're really into that stuff, Thursday night, I think we'll tweet out our pick relatively early in the day for the Arizona-Seattle game, because I think that there'll be an edge to have there.
Yes, sir. And Luke, what you got for us, man?
Today on Tuesday, I posted on Purple PTSD a little bit of an O-line assessment, since that's kind of been a storyline all year, is how much they've improved. And you should go read that for like a more sound analysis, but I'll give you one little nugget. In terms of PFF grades, run blocking and pass blocking for the main, like most involved 5 linemen, because 2016 had a bunch of shuffling, but they ended up having 5 people that played more than 70% of the snaps. Only one of those 10 grades between 5 run blocking and 5 pass blocking grades was above 70. And it was one of Alex Boone's grades. This year we have 7 of 10 above 70. So big improvement, and you should go read that piece.
We will definitely do that. Well, gentlemen, thank you once again for joining me tonight on the Pocket Protectors podcast. I'm sure we'll do this again soon. Have a good one.
Take care, guys.
Take care.